We are going to do today is continue in our study we've been doing on Wednesday morning, specifically looking at the timing of the writing of the epistles of the Apostle Paul. And what we are attempting to do is, in studying these epistles, get a better idea of where he was, or in the timing of the book of Acts, like where it was. Can you locate or pinpoint where it was, or when approximately he wrote the book of Galatians and in Thessalonians and Corinthians and Romans and so forth? And so that's what we've been looking at. We have spent several weeks on this already. We kind of laid down some very important groundwork. We asked you to identify and to mark in your Bibles, or at least take some notes, with regard to Paul's three apostolic journeys. And then, of course, his eventual trip to Rome and so forth, because that is going to help us pinpoint where the Apostle Paul was when he wrote his various books. I'm not going to go and review all that. I would encourage you, in your own personal study time, if you were not with us during those lessons, to go back and study those. They are available on the website. The last time we were together, we just then began to pinpoint. We began to look at some of the books and began to pinpoint where the Apostle Paul was when he wrote those various books. And, of course, we started by looking at the book of Galatians. So I am going to take a few minutes just to review that. If you'll turn with me to the book of Galatians, start at chapter number 1. And what we're looking for in each of these books and in the book of Acts, we're looking for clues that will help us identify where Paul was when he wrote the book. If he mentions events in a book that occurred, if he mentions people's names, if he mentions cities, if he mentions locations, all of those things are very helpful in identifying, well, okay, Paul must have been here when he wrote the book, therefore, where would that be in the book of Acts, okay? So, if you'll turn with me to the book of Galatians, let's just review a little bit from what we looked at last time. If obviously the Apostle Paul writes the book of Galatians after his conversion, but how long after? Well, in chapter number 1 of Galatians, you have a very helpful time reference. He says, you can see in Galatians chapter number 1 at verse 15, he makes reference to his conversion. He says, but when it pleased God who separated me from my mother's womb and called me by his grace to reveal his son in me, that I might preach him among the heathen, immediately I conferred not with flesh and blood. So obviously that's a reference to his conversion there. So you know, obviously, he has to write the book of Galatians after his conversion. But then he also says at verse 17, neither went I up to Jerusalem to them which were apostles before me, but I went into Arabia and returned again into Damascus. Then after 3 years, I went to Jerusalem. So, since he mentions those events, therefore, he has to write the book of Galatians after those events have happened. He mentions 3 years there in Galatians chapter 1, verse 18. If you'll jump to chapter 2, verse 1, he says this, then 14 years after, I went again to Jerusalem. Okay, so that means that he could not have written the book of Galatians until 14 years after his conversion. What I'm saying is you when you look in these various books and read some of the details, it absolutely helps you understand at least the earliest that he could have written it. You may not be able to pinpoint exactly when he wrote it, but you can determine that it would have been after, you know, this point. So you know that the book of Galatians could not have been written prior to that extended period of time, 14 years after his conversion. Okay? Now, what's kind of interesting about that, what's helpful about that, is that if you pinpoint his conversion in Acts chapter number 9, which is, of course, where the record has it occurring when Luke writes the book of Acts, and if you were to progress 14 years beyond that, that puts you right around his first apostolic journey, which is in Acts 13 and 14. Acts 13 and 14. So if that is the case, then of course he must have written the book of Galatians after his first apostolic journey. Now that would also make sense from this standpoint. When I say he must have written it after his first apostolic journey, is because it was on his first apostolic journey that he goes to the territory, that one of the territories that he went to during that first apostolic journey is the territory, the Galatian territory. It doesn't cover the whole territory. He covers kind of the southern part and so forth. But he at least covers and reaches that territory during his first apostolic journey. So that would be Acts 13 and 14, which tells you he doesn't write the book until after Acts chapter number 14, at least, okay? But also, notice something else here in Galatians chapter 2, verse 1. He says, then 14 years after I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and took Titus with me also. And of course, he records about what is typically referred to as the Jerusalem Council, the Jerusalem Council, when Paul went to Jerusalem to talk with the others there and explain to them the message he's preaching among the Gentiles. And that certainly seems to be consistent with Acts chapter number 15. Acts chapter number 15. And if it is, which again, the evidence seems to indicate that that is the best place to put it and so forth, then therefore he can't write the book of Galatians, he doesn't write the book of Galatians until sometime after the events that are recorded at the Jerusalem Council in Acts chapter number 15. Okay? Fine. Again, this is all review. That's why I'm doing this kind of quickly. But you'll notice there's another event that he mentions here in Galatians chapter number 2. From verses 1 through 10 are some of the details Paul records about his trip to Jerusalem, which would be consistent with Acts chapter number 15. But then he mentions, if you look at chapter 2, verse 11, and this is about as far as we got last time, Galatians 2:11, he says this, but when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face, because he was to be blamed. For before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation. But when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, I said unto Peter before them all, if thou, being a Jew, livest after the manner of the Gentiles, and not as do the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles to live as do the Jews? And so on. Now, my purpose right now is to not get into all, I'm not getting into all the doctrine of this. When we studied Galatians, which we just recently finished Galatians, but when we studied Galatians, we studied the doctrine and everything that's going on in great detail here. You can go to the website and listen to those lessons. That's not what we're doing right now. All I want you to know at this point is the fact that since Paul mentions this trip by Peter to Antioch, then obviously he wrote the book after the event occurred, because he includes it in the book. Okay? So that helps us understand something else. If you'll go back to the book of Acts chapter number 15, look at Acts chapter number 15. Acts chapter number 15, and look at Acts chapter number 15, and Acts 15, of course, records the details about the so-called Jerusalem Council and so forth. Paul is dispatched. He's sent back up to those that he's ministering to. Look at verse 22, Acts 15, 22. Then pleased the apostles and elders with the whole church to send chosen men of their own company to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas, namely Judas, surnamed Barsabas, and Silas, chief men among the brethren. So at this point, Paul is dispatched from Jerusalem. He goes back to Antioch with a couple of these guys. Notice Peter's not in that group. Did you notice that? Peter is not in that group. So that means that Peter, when he does come to Antioch, has to have that event of him coming to Antioch happens sometime after, you know, verse 22, 23, 24. In fact, if you come down, look at verse 30. So when they were dismissed, they came to Antioch. So Paul gets back to Antioch at that point, but Peter's not in that group. Okay? It's Paul, it's of course Titus and so forth, it's Barnabas, and then you can see back up from verse 22, Silas is there, Barsabas and so forth. So they go back to Antioch. And they read the letter, they tell the folks up there what happened and so forth. Look at verse 22, and Judas and Silas, being prophets, also themselves exhorted the brethren with many words and confirmed them. And after they had tarried there a space, they were let go in peace from the brethren unto the apostles, notwithstanding it pleased Silas to abide still there. Paul also and Barnabas continued in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord with many others also. Now, that somewhere along in there, no doubt, is when Peter comes to Antioch, and this he basically causes this what Galatians 2 described as the dissimulation, this dissimulation. And one of the reasons that I'm suggesting that it happens along in there is that the implication in Acts 15, when Paul gets back to Antioch, he reads the letter, he encourages them, there's no indication from Acts, from the record of by Luke and Acts here, that there's any discord going on. So it must have happened sometime after about maybe verse 33, 34, and probably before verse 35, because at verse 35 in Acts 15 it says, Paul also and Barnabas continued in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord with many others also. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. So if you had to pinpoint where the event occurs when Peter comes to Antioch and causes the dissimulation, it's probably going to be somewhere between verse 35 and 36. Probably between verse 35 and 36. Somewhere along in there, if you had to pinpoint it. Again, it's not completely conclusive, but that's probably a reasonable place to put it, somewhere along in there. Because then what happens is that Paul, in chapter 16, verse 1, then came he to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timotheus. This basically begins his second apostolic journey. So the indication seems to be, if you could, Galatians is a little bit hard to pinpoint where it was that he wrote it from and at what point. But if you had to, you can say almost certainly that he does not write the book of Galatians prior to Acts 15. Almost certainly he doesn't write it until after Acts 15, or maybe sometime along in Acts 15, maybe somewhere between verse 35 when he's in Antioch there. Okay? Now, there sometimes people say, well, no, he probably wrote it later, Acts 18, 19, and so forth. One of the reasons that I don't think that he wrote it a lot later than this is that when he writes the book of Galatians, he writes it with certainly some sense of urgency. He's attempting to address right away, when word got back to him about the Galatians departing from the doctrines of grace and so forth, he's attempting to address this right away. So it would seem to me that if that's the case, he doesn't wait for several years to go by when word gets back to him about the Galatians departing from the grace that he had taught them. He gets all over this thing. And if you look back at hold Acts 15 in Galatians chapter number 1, look at Galatians 1 here, and notice what he says at verse 6. He says, I marvel, Galatians 1:6 says this, I marvel that ye are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. You see the sense of urgency and the sense of concern that Paul has to deal with this right away. He says, not only are you so soon, if he was concerned about how soon they had been removed, I mean, it's like he would take care of this right away. He wouldn't wait for another 5, 10, 20 years and so forth to write this document to them, you see? And you can see the great warning in verse 8 and 9 and so forth. We're not going to go into all the details of that. But when you read the book of Galatians, you absolutely sense that Paul has this sense of urgency, that he's got to deal with this right away, as soon as possible. And because that is the case, then it seems to me that it would be inconsistent if Paul waits for several more years after word gets to him about this great departing from the doctrines of grace that the Galatians were doing. It would seem inconsistent that he would wait, 5, 10, 20 more years to write the book. Okay? So that's why when you put all that together, you know for sure he doesn't write the book of Galatians until after, say around Acts 15 and about maybe verse 31, 32, 33, 34, along in there. Since he also includes the account of Peter coming to Antioch, well, then that means Paul was still at Antioch when Peter got there, so that means Paul couldn't have written it prior to those events. So I take it that the Apostle Paul writes the book of Galatians somewhere towards the end of Acts 15, and or maybe as he's beginning his second apostolic journey as recorded in the first part of chapter 16. Maybe it's easier just to say it this way, that he writes the book of Galatians somewhere early in Acts 16 or late Acts 15. That maybe is the easiest way to say it, okay? It is of the books that the Apostle Paul writes during the Acts ministry. Now let me clarify what I mean by that. Paul writes certain books during the Acts ministry, the Acts period, and then he writes some other books at the end of the book of Acts, okay? And of those books that he writes during the Acts, his Acts ministry and so forth, the Acts period, that would be the book of Galatians, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and the book of Romans, okay? So he writes those during his Acts ministry and the apostolic journeys and so forth. The others he writes later on. And of those books that he writes during the Acts ministry, the book of Galatians is the hardest to really pinpoint where it was that he wrote it from and the timing and so forth. So you can say, well, he couldn't have written it before a certain point, but how soon after that point does he write it? And because of the sense of urgency in the book and so forth, if he really wants to squelch that departing from grace and so forth, that's why I take it that he writes it probably sometime towards the end of Acts 15 and maybe the first part of Acts 16, somewhere along there. I wish it could be more specific, but I can't figure anything out beyond that. Okay, so hopefully that's at least somewhat helpful. That does help us in, frankly, a number of ways, and one of the most important ways it helps us is that if Paul does write the book of Galatians, say around the end of Acts 15, Acts 16, Acts 17, somewhere along in there, then that means that warning the Apostle Paul gives in Galatians chapter number 1, look at Galatians chapter number 1, verse 8. Galatians 1, 8 says this, "But though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. As we said before, so say I now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have received, let him be accursed." There is a view out there among some believers, and even, this is kind of sound a little strange, but even within some grace groups, some groups who have a fairly good grasp of Paul's distinctive apostleship and ministry, there's a view out there among some, not all, but there's a view out there among some that during the first part of Paul's ministry, he's preaching the gospel of the kingdom. And then during the latter part of Paul's ministry, like Acts 28 and beyond, or even Acts 20 and beyond, that's when Paul starts preaching the gospel of the grace of God. If you look over to Acts chapter number 20, look over to Acts chapter number 20 and watch this here. You may not run across this too often, but you will eventually run across this view that says the Apostle Paul preaches two different gospels during his ministry. The first part of his ministry, he's preaching the gospel of the kingdom. And then finally, towards the end, or at least beginning here in Acts chapter number 20, he finally starts preaching the gospel of the grace of God. Look over to Acts chapter number 20, and I'm going to look at verse 24. He says, "But none of these things move me, neither count I my life dear unto myself, so that I might finish my course with joy in the ministry which I have received of the Lord Jesus to testify the gospel of the grace of God." So the view that some people teach from this verse, which I completely disagree with, this is non-supportable from the other verses. The view that people teach in this passage is that it's at this point that Jesus Christ gives to him the gospel of the grace of God. And therefore, Paul was not preaching, this is the view, that Paul was not preaching the gospel of the grace of God until this point. Again, notice verse 24. He says, "But none of these things move me, neither count I my life dear unto myself, so that I might finish my course with joy and the ministry which I have received. They say, see, he received it right then, right there, not before. That's the view. The view is that Paul here, when he's at Miletus and he's speaking to the Ephesian elders and so forth, because he called them to meet him at Miletus and so forth, he's conveying to them and the others that, hey, he got this advanced revelation now called the Gospel of the Grace of God. He just got it right hand, right there at this point. So at this point, he starts preaching the Gospel of the Grace of God. Therefore, the conclusion is that he could not have been preaching the Gospel of the Grace of God prior to this point. He starts it from here on. So again, there's the idea that the Apostle Paul, during the first part of his Acts ministry, he's preaching the Gospel of the Kingdom. And then from this point on, or towards later on and so forth, he's preaching the Gospel of the Grace of God. Now, for me personally, that creates a ton of confusion. It doesn't help solve the problems that they try to solve, that they want to solve, by coming up with this idea. First of all, notice even the description he says right here, when he says in verse 24, he says, but none of these things move me, neither count I my life dear unto myself, so that I might, what's the next word there? Might finish my course. He's already been preaching this thing. This thing didn't just start right now. He wants to finish what he's been doing all along, that he might finish my course. You see that? With joy and the ministry. He wants to finish the thing. Well, then that means he's been doing it for some time. This is not the starting point of the Gospel of the Grace of God. Okay? So, you know, and I've heard all the different arguments and explanations. Oh, no, this is the... You know, I just don't buy it. It's not consistent with what's going on. Plus, certainly the Apostle Paul wrote the book of Galatians long before Acts chapter number 20. And again, if he wrote it, say, around Acts 15 or Acts 16, even Acts 17 and so forth, that's his second apostolic journey. And he says over there in Galatians chapter number 1, I don't care if you say he wrote the book of Galatians in Acts 18, that's fine. I don't care. Say Acts 18. Say Acts 17. But the point is, he clearly wrote the book of Galatians before what he declares in Acts 20, verse 24. And so if in Galatians chapter number 1, verse 8 and 9, he says, but though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. As we said before, so say now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that which ye have received, let him be accursed. If the Apostle Paul changes the gospel message that he's preaching, if he changes it in Acts 20 and starts preaching a different gospel message than that which he had preached to the Galatians, then he himself would be under the very curse that he describes in Galatians chapter 1, verse 8 and 9. Period. Done. Let me say it again, just in case you're still arguing with this, okay? if the Apostle Paul is preaching a different gospel in Acts chapter 20 as compared to what he was preaching when he wrote the book of Galatians, and he clearly writes the book of Galatians long before Acts chapter number 20, then he himself, when he starts preaching the gospel of the grace of God, would be under the curse that he pronounces in the book of Galatians, chapter 1, verse 8 and 9. And so would everybody else from that point forward that ever appeals to the book of Galatians as the basis of preaching the clear gospel of grace. And all the arguments in the book of Galatians, you'd have to throw them out the window. I mean, all those issues about why you're not under the law, why grace works, all those arguments about you're an heir of God, a joint heer with Christ, all those doctrines about the sonship, your sonship position in Christ and so forth, you'd have to say, well, none of that applies, because if we go back and preach that and we start preaching a different message, then we're under the curse. I cannot say that strongly enough, that if the Apostle Paul in Acts chapter number 20 starts preaching a different gospel than what he was preaching at the time he wrote the book of Galatians, then he himself would be under the curse that he pronounces in Galatians 1, verse 8 and 9. And so would everyone else afterwards that's preaching what he preached. so would you and I. It just makes no sense. It's complete. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't help solve the problems that people like say exist in Paul's early ministry as compared to his later ministry. I recognize that certainly there's some advancement on the things that he's teaching. I recognize that. He doesn't have everything. He doesn't have the full revelation of the mystery during the first part of his ministry. I completely acknowledge that and agree that that is so. But he says that is so in the book of Corinthians, that he says we know in part. when that which is perfect has come. So that which is perfect is going to be the rest of the revelation of the mystery. All right. So anyway, that's just something to keep in mind there. Okay, so again, if we had to pinpoint or had to identify a general area of where it was the Apostle Paul wrote the book of Galatians, it's going to be somewhere probably towards the end of Acts 15 or somewhere the first part of Acts chapter 16, maybe the start of his second apostolic journey. Okay, now then, let's go over to the book of 1 Thessalonians. Let's see if we can pinpoint. The reason I'm doing it in this order is because this is the order in which they appear to have been written. Galatians first, and then he appears to write 1 Thessalonians, then 2 Thessalonians, then 1 Corinthians, then 2 Corinthians, then Romans. So that's why we're going to do it in this order. All right, so what I want you to do is we're going to turn now to 1 Thessalonians and start. We've got to put our thinking caps on here now. We've got to start, hopefully you had your coffee this morning and you're all woken up and everything and you can kind of, your brain will work a little bit. You can kind of put your thinking caps on, okay? All right, so notice there's going to be some helpful information in the book of 1 Thessalonians to pinpoint where it was when he wrote this book. So he says, look at verse 1, Paul and Silvanus and Timotheus unto the church of the Thessalonians, which is in God the Father and in the Lord Jesus Christ. Okay, first question. When is the absolute earliest that the Apostle Paul could have written the book of 1 Thessalonians? Now you're saying, wait a minute, John, you haven't given us enough detail. Well, absolutely I have. If you've been with us for these lessons and so forth, and even if you haven't, you already know something based upon that verse right there. When is the absolute earliest that the Apostle Paul could have written the book of 1 Thessalonians? Anybody have an answer there? All right, that's right. The absolute earliest he could have written the book is at sometime after the church at Thessalonica had been established. Because he obviously writes this to the saints to the church at Thessalonica. So, question now becomes, where in the book of Acts is it that Paul first went and then established? Where is it that he first went down to Thessalonica and then began to preach with them and teach them and then establish the local assembly? Anybody remember? See, that's why I say you do have enough information to figure out the answer to this initial question. Well, if you turn back to the book of Acts, where is it in the book of Acts that the Apostle Paul first goes to Thessalonica? Yep, that's right. You got it right. It's there in Acts chapter number 17. That's when he goes down to Thessalonica for the first time. This is on his second apostolic journey, and he goes down to Thessalonica. Thessalonica is, of course, up in Macedonia there. Acts 17, verse 1 says this, "Now when they had passed through Epiphilus and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica," and so forth. So he could not have written the book before this point. He must write the book after this point. I know you're getting that, okay? All right, so hold on to Acts 17. And now go back with me, if you would, to 1 Thessalonians. This time we're going to turn to chapter number 2. This time we're going to turn to chapter number 2. In 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians chapter number 2. And notice, look at verse 17. He says in chapter 2, 17, he says, "But we, brethren, being taken from you for a short time in presence, not in heart, endeavored the more abundantly to see your face with great desire. Wherefore we would have come unto you, even I, Paul, once and again, but Satan hindered us." Chapter 3, verse 1. "Wherefore, when we could no longer forbear, we thought it good to be left at Athens alone, and sent Timotheus, our brother and minister of God, and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Christ, to establish you," and so forth. Now, there are a lot of clues right there to help us understand and pinpoint this even further, where it was that the Apostle Paul wrote the book of Thessalonians, where in the book of Acts he wrote it. Okay, number one. You can see verse 17, Paul was no longer at Thessalonica. Number two, he's been trying to get back to Thessalonica based upon verse 18, once and again. Number three, he sent Timotheus and he abode at Athens. See that? So those are some important clues there. Not only that, Look at chapter 3, verse 6. He sent Timotheus, back into Thessalonica to help establish them and comfort them and so forth. But then if you look at chapter 3, verse 6, but now when Timotheus was come from you unto us. So that's another important clue. That means Timothy went back to Thessalonica, spent some time there, found out how they were doing, edified them a little bit, and then came back and met with the Apostle Paul. See that? So that means that Paul had to have written the book after all those events that he includes in the book had occurred. Let me say that again. That means that the Apostle Paul had to have written 1 Thessalonians sometime after all those events that he mentions in the book had occurred. So it had to have been written after he was run out of town. It had to have been written sometime after he was down in Athens and sent Timotheus, and Timotheus had gone up there and come back and described to the Apostle Paul how the Thessalonians were doing. You can see at verse 6 again, chapter 3, verse 6, but now when Timotheus came from you unto us and brought us good tidings of your faith and charity, and that you have good remembrance of us, always desiring greatly to see us, as we also to see you. Therefore, brethren, we were comforted. So he includes not just the fact that Timothy had come back, he includes in the book Timothy's good report about how the Thessalonians were faring and so forth, but he also includes in there how much of an encouragement it was to himself. You see that? You can see at verse 10, he says, night and day praying exceedingly that we might see your face and might perfect that which is lacking in your faith. So he's still trying to get back, but he can't. Okay? All right. Now, with all those bits of information, let's see if we can pinpoint in the book of Acts kind of at least narrow this down where it was that the Apostle Paul was when he wrote the book of Acts. All right, so go back with me now to Acts chapter 17. In Acts 17, he comes to Thessalonica, verse 1. He meets with the Jews in the synagogues, and then there some of them believe and so forth. You can see at verse 4, some of them believed and consorted with Paul and Silas and the devout Greeks, a great multitude of the chief women, not a few. So pretty good impact there. It gets the ministry going. But then verse 5, but the Jews which believed not, moved with envy, took unto them certain lewd fellows of the baser sort and gathered the company and set all the city on an uproar and assaulted the house of Jason and sought to bring them out to the people. When they found them not, they drew Jason and certain brethren unto the rulers of the city, crying, these that have turned the world upside down are come hither also, whom Jason having received... And these all do contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, one Jesus. And they troubled the people and the rulers of the city when they heard these things. And when they had taken security of Jason and the others, they let them go. Watch verse 10 now. And the brethren immediately sent away Paul and Silas by night. Now, if you look at that verse, compare that with 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 17. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 17. See the phrase here? He says, but we, brethren, being taken from you. I mean, Paul had to get out of town for his life. You can see it in Acts. It says they sent him out by night. Okay, so that would kind of line up with that. Now, let's see where he goes. Back in Acts 17, verse 10, he goes down to Berea. Verse 11 is the description about the Bereans. Now watch verse 13. But when the Jews of Thessalonica had acknowledged that the word of the Lord was preached by Paul at Berea, they came thither also and stirred up the people. And then immediately the brethren sent away Paul to go as it were to the sea. But Silas and Timotheus abode there still. And they that conducted Paul brought him unto where? Athens. Oh, wait a minute now. See, go to 1 Thessalonians 3:1, it says this, wherefore, when we could no longer forbear, we thought it good to be left at Athens alone. Ah, well, that's another marker then. That's another marker there. See how we can kind of, see how the information in that he writes in the book of 1 Thessalonians helps us pinpoint where the book was written during the time period of the book of Acts. See that there? So hold 1 Thessalonians 3, but go back to Acts 17 and put the pieces of the puzzle together here. Acts 17, verse 15. And they that conducted Paul brought him unto Athens, and receiving a commandment unto Silas and Timotheus for to come to him with all speed, they departed. So remember, Silas and Timotheus were left up at Berea. Paul goes down to Athens, and then he tells the guys that are with him, go tell Silas and Timotheus to come to me right away. So apparently, that's what happens. Silas and Timotheus come to Paul at Athens. Okay, look at verse 16. Now when Paul waited for them at Athens, so at some point, Silas and Timotheus come to Paul at Athens, and at that point, Paul looked back to 1 Thessalonians 3:1, it says this, wherefore when we could no longer forbear, we thought it good to be left at Athens alone and sent Timotheus, our brother, and minister of God, and our fellow laborer, in the gospel of Christ to establish you. So Silas and Timotheus come down to Athens, have a brief meeting with the Apostle Paul. He says, Timotheus, I need you to go back to Thessalonica, see how they're doing. And he sends them off and he abides at Athens alone. Okay? So you can kind of get a pretty good idea of where he's at. So he dispatches them back to Thessalonica, but he stays at Athens. And then this whole discourse, the rest of the chapter in Acts chapter number 17, this whole discourse with the Athenians and to the unknown God, and they're worshiping the wrong God and all that. And again, we're not getting to all the details of that. But what happens at this point is this. Look at in Acts 17 now. Watch this. Verse 33. Acts 17:33 says this. So Paul departed from among them, howbeit certain men clave unto him and believed, among the which was Dionysus, how do you pronounce that name? The Areopagite, and a woman named Damaris, and others with them. After these things, Paul departed from Athens and came to Corinth. So now he moves on to Corinth from Athens. Now, let me keep reading. Watch what happens. Follow along here. Found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, lately come from Italy. That's Aquila and Priscilla. He stays with them. Now watch verse 4 and 5. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded the Jews and the Greeks. And when Silas and Timotheus were come from where? From Macedonia. Well, what groups are in Macedonia? That's right. The Thessalonians, the Bereans, the Philippians. And based upon the information in 1 Thessalonians chapter number 3, Paul sent Timotheus back up to Macedonia and to see how the Thessalonians were doing, and now they have come back. Look at, again, chapter 18 of Acts, 18:5. Watch what we're told here. And when Silas and Timotheus were come from Macedonia, Paul was pressed in the Spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus was Christ. See, Timotheus and Silas get back and they tell the Apostle Paul how the Thessalonians were doing. And it's against that backdrop and those details that the Apostle Paul writes the book of 1 Thessalonians. Now let's compare this with 1 Thessalonians chapter number 3. Go back with me to 1 Thessalonians chapter number 3. Watch the whole account here. So he says at verse 1, 1 Thessalonians 3:1 says this, wherefore, when we could no longer forbear, we thought it good to be left at Athens alone, and sent Timotheus, our brother and minister of God, and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Christ, to establish you and to comfort you concerning your faith. See how he stays there alone? He dispatches them. He says that no man should be moved by these afflictions, for yourselves know that we are appointed thereunto. They're going through great affliction, and Paul was quite concerned about how they would fare in the warfare. For verily, when we were with you, we told you before that we should suffer tribulation, even as it came to pass. And you know, verse 5, 1 Thessalonians 3:5, for this cause, when I could no longer forbear, I sent to know your faith, lest by some means the tempter have tempted you, and our labor be in vain. Now watch this. But now, when Timotheus came from you unto us, Well, that's got to be Acts chapter number 18, verse 5. I mean, that's the earliest it could be, Acts 18, verse 5. So watch what happens. Back at 1 Thessalonians 3, 6. 1 Thessalonians 3, 6. But now, when Timotheus came from you unto us, and brought us good tidings of your faith and charity, and that we have good, and that ye have good remembrance of us, always desiring greatly to see us as we also to see you. See, they're very positive towards Paul and the doctrine he's preaching. They have good remembrance of Paul, the good remembrance of the doctrine. They have great desire to get more doctrine. They want to see Paul. They want to continue the edification process here. Now, what's the impact it had on Paul? Therefore, brethren, we were comforted over you in all our affliction and distress by your faith. Well, listen, that's what Paul's describing here in the first part of Acts chapter number chapter 18. The affliction, the distress, the suffering that he's experiencing, the pressure that he is under for this message. And when Timotheus comes back and explains to them how the Thessalonians are faring well, they have a great remembrance of the doctrine Paul was teaching them. They greatly desire to see Paul, to get more information, to get more doctrine. You got to know that Paul absolutely says it was a comfort to him. Therefore, brethren, we were comforted over you in all our affliction and distress by your faith. For now we live, if you stand fast, Lord. For what thanks can we render to God again for you, for all the joy wherewith we joy for your sakes before our God, night and day praying exceedingly that we might see your face and might perfect that which is lacking in your faith, and so forth. And that's what occasions the writing of the book of 1 Thessalonians. He himself cannot get back to them. He wants to continue the edification process with them, but he can't get back there. There are things that are lacking in their faith. There's doctrine that's lacking in their edification and so forth, in their understanding, because Paul wasn't able to teach them. So he dispatches Timothy. Timothy comes back and says they're doing really well. They're standing pretty firmly in what you've taught them, but he can't get back, so he writes the book, and he sends the book back to them. And you can see in Acts chapter number 18, Acts chapter number 18, verse 5 again, he says, and when Silas and Timotheus were come from Macedonia, Paul was pressed in the Spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus was Christ. And when they opposed themselves and blasphemed, he shook his raiment and said to them, your blood be upon your own head. See the confidence now, the encouragement, the godly boasting, I am clean from henceforth. From henceforth I will go unto the Gentiles. He departed thence and entered into a certain man's house named Justus, one that whose house that worshipped God, whose house joined hard to the synagogue, and so forth. So I take it that the Apostle Paul wrote the book of 1 Thessalonians right along here, somewhere right along here, after Timotheus had come back and given him a good report about Thessalonians. Paul is very much encouraged, strengthened spiritually, and then begins to continue to preach boldly in the name of the Lord. So if you want to write down somewhere along in here, Acts 18 is where he writes the book of 1 Thessalonians. Somewhere at this point is when he writes it. Okay, and again, you got all the evidence that sure would seem to indicate that is the case. Okay. All right. Well, tell you what, we're out of time. We'll pick up here next time, review a little bit in 1 Thessalonians, then look over to 2 Thessalonians to see if we can figure out when he wrote that book. Let's just see if we have any questions about what we've studied this morning or last couple of weeks and so forth. If you do have a question, just raise your hand there. We'll give you the microphone. All right. Well, I don't see any hands up at this point, so hopefully that's clear as can be, or else it's so muddy, so unclear, nobody even knows how to answer a question about it. I do hope that this is helpful for everybody in kind of pinpointing these things and so forth. And let me just mention that we will be on for our next live session tonight at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're not quite sure what to expect because, of course, it's Halloween night and so forth. I have no idea if the door is going to be people knocking at the door all night. We don't participate in Halloween and everything, but I mean, our lights will be on and everything. We'll be here with Bible study, so we'll just have to see what happens. Who knows? Well, maybe as they're coming, we have Bible tracts. We'll give them Bible tracts or whatever. But But we are planning on having study tonight here at my house. We were going to have it down at Valley Center, but we're not able to go down there. Evidently, the Valley Center has got a big parade, a street parade. There's a bunch of kids on the streets and everything. So there was John and Cindy called and said they're just quite concerned about the traffic and the kids on the street and so forth. So we're actually going to have it here tonight. So we'll just see how it turns out, and hopefully you can join us. And remember, our new verse, because we had to change the name of the room, is based on Colossians chapter number 2 there, where it talks about Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. By now you should have that verse memorized. So join us later on this evening, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a great afternoon. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.